Yo, what is up, everybody? My first solo episode. This already feels like a mistake. It already feels like a mistake. But yeah, let's talk about it. Things I want to talk about. How I bombed really hard in Midland, Michigan. And how Palestine is getting bombed harder than that. And it's Ramadan. Now, Muslims can be fun again. And what else did I want to talk about on this? Oh, yeah. My doctor's a piece of shit. So, yeah. Let's get the show started.
Public Yemeni number one.
Yes, everything works. Thank God. I don't know about this setup I got. To be honest, part of me is kind of like, I don't know. We'll figure it out. So far, it's working. You know, this camera keeps focusing in and out. I'm got to try to figure that thing out. There's so many things to figure out, you know. I hope your guys' week has been good. I hope you guys are relaxing. I hope you're figuring out how to navigate this bullshit without getting too emotional. Cause, yeah, I'm getting fucking older. I think that's why, like, when you're a young kid and you look like an older person and you're just like, man, they don't get mad at anything. Oh no, they're mad. We don't got enough energy to spend on it. Like, I'm getting to that age. This fucking sucks. I hate talking about this shit, but I literally am getting to that age right now where my body is like, all right, man, this is how much energy I got. What are we doing? Are we going to go for a run? Or are you trying to have sex with this girl tonight? Because we're not doing both. That's where I'm fucking at right now. Okay, maybe not that. I'm over-exaggerating like a good Arab. I'm over-exaggerating, adding chapters, so to speak, is what we called it in my neighborhood, adding chapters. But yeah, you know, I hope you guys are navigating this shit in a way where you're breathing enough and realizing that this all might be a simulation and you don't really exist. That's not sad if you take DMT. I implore you to do drugs. I do. I mean, it's the end of Ramadan to my Muslim friends, family, and everyone. I love you guys. Hope you guys had a great Ramadan filled with love and family. Ramadan's easy when you're an adult. I remember when I was doing it back when I was an adult. Ramadan was pretty easy, you know? Like, I do a form of it right now. It's like the white people version. It's called intermittent fasting, where they don't, like, eat their all day. And then they eat later. I don't know. But happy Eid to all of you. I always remember growing up in Dearborn, where we have the highest concentration of Arab Americans living outside of the Middle East. You know, like the racist Republicans on TV, like Glenn Beck would call it Dearbornistan, you know, and then they would like try to spin stories about how there's all kinds of terrorism in Dearborn. There wasn't. But, you know, growing up in Dearborn, I practiced Ramadan. And it was, to me, I think one of the best things that I got out of Islam was practicing Ramadan. Because, like, you know, I don't know if your families did it, but my families would, like, bestow empathy. And they would tell me, hey, you know, some people are poor, and this is what it feels like, you know. And they would also put it into perspective. Like, I fucking hated broccoli. As a kid, I hated broccoli. I remember my dad hated the first George Bush president. Like when I was a kid, he would always yell at the TV watching the news. That's what Arab dads did. They would like watch the news and then like everyone would have to shut the fuck up. And he would like get mad at George Bush. Like he hated him and shit. And I remember like I was a young kid. I didn't understand politics. All I knew is I liked George Bush because he hated broccoli. Fuck broccoli. I hated it. But like my dad would like start using Ramadan to like get back at me for not eating broccoli, you know? Like, especially Ramadan during the summer solstice where the sun doesn't go down till like 9 at night. Fucking 9:30, 9:50 sometimes. So you'd get back from like playing all day, not drinking, not eating, nothing. Coming back hungry as fuck. Still got 3 hours till the sun fucking goes down before you can start eating. And that's when the trolling happened. That's when my dad would like steam broccoli, you know, put fucking salt on it in front of me. Butter. Put it in front of me. Like, smell that. Doesn't that smell good? Imagine. Imagine right now. Would you eat that? How good would that be? He put a bowl of water. Not a glass of water. A bowl. Not a regular bowl. A fucking casserole bowl. We were Arabs. Why the fuck do we have casserole bowls? I don't think my mom made one casserole. What the fuck is a casserole? Why am I mad? A bowl of water and troll me, you know? And I don't know. I think I got a lot from Ramadan. I got a lot from Ramadan, you know, in terms of like realizing how good I had it, you know? Cause like my parents, like they would fucking troll me during Ramadan, but they would like make me realize just how good I had it. How much I was complaining for fucking nothing, you know? I think I remember like I was trying to get on my mom's good side and I would tell her, I was like, yes, you know, you're right, Mom. Now I know what it likes to be, you know, someone who's less fortunate. And then my mom would be like, yeah, but you know, the sun goes down, you get to eat. That doesn't happen in the rest of the world for a lot of people, you know? So like when other Muslims ask me if I'm Muslim, I say I'm not, because let's face it, I'm not doing it. I'm not practicing it. I don't want to be one of those Muslims that walk around and say I'm Muslim just to appease you. Funny thing is a lot of Muslims will get mad. They get mad, how come you're not a Muslim anymore? I was like, because I'm being honest with myself. Do you know how many people out there I see with religions that don't even really practice it? Like they just wear it like a badge or like a way to get into a club or to be accepted with the amongst their family. You know, it's just I noticed that in all religions. You know, it's just one big club. And if you're not in it, we're gonna kill you. Or smile and then talk shit about you later. I don't know. Ramadan. So yeah, I think it's hard to be a Muslim. I don't think it's easy. I think it's, if you're going to do it, you got to do it for real. I was honest with myself. I was like, this is not for me. This is like very, very regimented. Something I don't ever want to really implement. You know, I think I learned what I learned from the religion and it was great. And I think Ramadan was probably the best lesson. I think pain, you know, is great for you. You know, it really, really builds discipline. I think if you're not Muslim, you should 1 year show solidarity with Muslims and do Ramadan. You know? I think it'd be harder to get your kids to follow it because it's not your religion, you know? Because like for me, it was like, you want to do the whole month because then like all your sins are wiped away. They're gone. And I'm like, really? Is that why Muslims are only really good Muslims during Ramadan? Because that's the hypocrisy, I think, in most people. Doesn't matter about religion or whatever. The hypocrisy is the idea that, you know, that God is intermittent. God only cares. One time a month, one day a week. You know? But anyways, yeah, Ramadan. Ramadan is the real deal, you know? And now people in the West call it intermittent fasting. And it's interesting. It's interesting how religion and science are like coming together. Like, it's almost getting me to realize, like, maybe there was something with religion. Maybe the ancestors had pertinent knowledge from the previous ancestors, their ancestors, who some believe may have been like super advanced humans, and that a very cataclysmic, massive event happened that wiped out the majority of the human race and all that technology. And that religion right now is basically those surviving humans' desperate attempt to piecemeal whatever knowledge they sort of kind of remembered they had. So, you know, I'm starting to notice that there are a lot of things happening where, like, religion and science is coming together, sort of like the multiverse theory. I'm like, I've been really into this book called The Hidden Reality by Brian Greene, and basically talking about how science is now starting to prove through string theory, which is very complex math, that there are a multiple parallel universes, and we reside in every single iteration of all those infinite parallel universes. And one of the fascinating ideas that come from that is the idea that consciousness resides in the quantum state. So when you go from atomic level, things sort of still act the way we normally see physics acting. But then when they get subatomic to the quantum level, things start acting weird. And one of the things that they notice is that these quantum particles will do this thing, what they call superposition. Well, it'll be in multiple places at the same time, where the particle could be in one part of the universe and another part of the universe at the same time. So then now there's this theory within that theory that states that our conscious mind resides on the quantum level, that it resides in superposition, so that your conscious mind resides in every iteration of the multiverse. So there's other idea that quantum suicide, meaning that if you were to shoot yourself in the head, this is very, very like lame in the way I'm explaining it. If you were to shoot yourself in the head, everyone around you would witness you dying, but you would witness the other option, the gun not going off. So I don't know. Because now string theory is thinking that this entire thing might be a simulation. And I think Bill Hicks had this bit where he would make fun of Christians for believing that the universe was only 10,000 years old. That Allah, apparently some super extreme Christians believe that the universe is only 10,000 years old. And then his joke was, you know, well, then explain dinosaurs. Right? And I don't know now. What if the universe is 10,000 years old? What if we're in a simulation? That's only 10,000 years old, simulated to be 15 billion years old. Boosh, mind explode. It's just, I don't know. It's very interesting. The way I start seeing how we would laugh at certain things about religion, and then all of a sudden science is going, hey, there's this thing. Fasting is good for you. What? Yeah, not eating is great for you. How? I thought supersizing me was going to make me super. No, man. And then they're finding out that actually eating less calories throughout your lifetime overall extends life. More calories increases cell death. So what the fuck did those cavemen back then know? What the fuck did they know? You know, maybe Graham Hancock is right. You know, because he found water erosion around the pyramids and it's very controversial. You can look him up. Apparently he's saying that now that dates the pyramids even further back. You know, I think 100,000 or so years ago. So maybe humans were around a lot longer now and that we were civilized a lot longer. Who knows? But yeah, back to Ramadan. It's just intermittent fasting, survivor mode. Not this white people version, which I'm doing, mind you, where you can't eat, but then you still drink water. Because like a lot of people don't know this, but in Islam you can't drink water, you can't ingest any drugs, smoke, you can't have sex, you can't cuss, you gotta be pure. And to me, what's funny is like, I don't know. To me, I'm like, that's what I think Islam is supposed to be overall. Because I meet Muslims that really do it right, you know, and you can sense it. You can sense it when you meet them. Like, they're a peaceful person. And then this religion that they practice makes them a peaceful person. And like, I know a lot of good people that use the religion as a structure to enhance the goodness in their life, the harmony in their life. And also gives them a community and a structure to come together to do good. There's a lot of pluses. I'm not talking down on religion. I'm just saying it's just there wasn't for me. You know, I ate bacon and it was over. Actually, it was over before that. You know, I think it was over when my dad tried to explain to me what the sheikh at the mosques was saying. He was speaking Arabic. I couldn't speak Arabic, you know. I was just like, it was very boring to go to the mosque and just sit there and what is this guy saying? Then my dad gave me the rundown. He was like, well, he's telling a very famous story that's in the Quran and it's also in the Bible. He's like, God came to Abraham in the middle, in his dream, and told him, if you love me, you will behead your firstborn son. I'm sorry, but I got questions. That was it. I got too many motherfucking questions now, man. Because none of this shit makes sense. Maybe it was good that I couldn't speak Arabic. Maybe the imam was able to say that in a very eloquent way. But the way my dad said it to me, I was like, Why's God gotta be an a-hole? Like, why is he gotta be mad? What's his deal? Has he met Buddha? Has he thought like maybe a couple of downward dog poses would make me relax on these humans? Yeah. He's gonna kill his firstborn son. So he had to take his son to the top of a mountain. Why? You already got to kill your son. Now you're going to make him fucking climb a mountain? What the fuck? What the fuck? I don't know about that. You know, to me, what's funny about Islam is that every chapter starts off with Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, which means in the name of the Lord, the most merciful, the most compassionate. Every verse starts off with that first. Most merciful, most compassionate. And then you're going to tell me he came to Abraham and said that shit? Yo, kill your son. Nah. Don't do it there, motherfucker. Climb this mountain. Go to the very top. I want you to get a lot of cardio in. I want you to suffer through cardio and also knowing that you got to, like, take your son's head off. Long story short, apparently he gets to the top. He's about to cut his son's head off. And then God magically replaced it with a goat. So now he's a prankster. Part of me is worried, you know, like when somebody tells me this story of like God going to Abraham, telling him, cut your son's head off, climb a mountain first, last minute, I'm going to switch it with a goat. That fucking worries me. I don't know why anybody is like not like raising their hand and going, hey, this is creepy. Why would he do that? Like, maybe God is just a very highly intelligent green alien who loves to fuck with us. That would scare the shit out of me, you know? But how else do you want me to take from it? Because when I read it, it's like he's most compassionate, most merciful, but then he gets mad. I don't know. Anyways, my doctor's a piece of shit. Let's get to that. We don't have universal healthcare in this country. And usually the argument is that, if we did do universal healthcare for everyone, it will just like destroy the quality of our medical system. Look at how people from Canada come in and I don't know, man. Listen, I really can't I don't got much to say, really. Listen, I'm with an HMO. All right. There you go. Already. Bam. Right. You're an idiot, Mike. But it's been really good. Like before, it was really, really, really good. I had a great doctor. He was an Indian guy. And then they switched out the doctor on me. And now I got this other guy. It's just, it's not that he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's just the delivery of information. Like I had to get my neck MRI'd because every time I sleep now, I'm like getting this tingling sensation in my hand. It's fucking driving me crazy and it'll wake me up at night. So I get an MRI and the lady who calls me to set up the appointment to go over the MRI, which is going to be in like 3 weeks to a month or something, tells me, oh yeah, they went through the thing and they found that you have a degenerative disease on disc 5 and 6. And I'm like, fucking what? I got a fucking disease? I thought maybe it was just like, snowboarding accident. Like the last time I was snowboarding, I fell hard. So for fucking 4 weeks, I'm walking around thinking my neck is going to disintegrate because I have a degenerative disease. Then finally, I see the doctor who, this guy has no feelings. Like I'm just like a number to this guy. He comes in, opens up the MRI, points to the fucking thing, and he goes, so the report says you have a degenerative disease, which is just a fancy word for wear and tear. Then just say wear and tear, motherfucker. Why do I gotta like walk around for 4 fucking weeks thinking that my neck is gonna disintegrate? Listen, maybe I should have just Googled it. I get it. I probably should have Googled it. But I didn't. Instead, I got high and got paranoid about it. But still, the point is that guy. There's a way to hand out information. Right, Jeremy? It's just wear and tear. So fucking stupid. Just say wear and tear. Look at my face. Do I look like I know what degenerative disease means? You piece of shit, you're a doctor. And then I don't know, man. He didn't really give me that much information. He just pointed at a couple of things and just said, I don't think you need surgery. You just need physical therapy. Then he sends me to a physical therapist, which when I went there, I'm like, why the fuck do I need to come here? It just seems so fucking worthless. Not only that, I got to pay $60 copay every time I go there. They want to see me 10 times. And listen, I'm a guy who works out and I do a lot of I do a lot of research. I listen to a lot of great podcasts that break down, science and nutrition. And I really do try to be proactive in taking care of myself. So I go to this physical therapist place and in my mind, here's the thing. In my mind, if this fucking neck doctor is going to send me to a physical therapist, right? In my stupid fucking brain, actually, I don't think this is stupid. I think this makes sense. I'm thinking I'm going to go see this physical therapist. The physical therapist is going to sit down in front of me with my MRI or some type of report and sit there and go, okay, this is what's going on. We know this is the part that you need to work on. These discs, it says here, you're having tingling sensations that are waking you up at night. And now that we know exactly what this report says from your doctor that what we're supposed to do, let's start your therapy. No, motherfucker sat down in front of me. He's like, so how can I help you? I'm like, bitch, I'm here. You're supposed to help me. What do you mean? How? What? You tell me what we're supposed to do. So what's the problem? What's the problem? The problem is my doctor didn't talk to you. What the fuck? So now I have to explain to this guy what happened. What's going on? And he's behind a mask, and I can't tell if he understands what the fuck I'm saying. Then he assigns some girl who I think might be hot. She had a nice body, but it's hit the fucking mask. Couldn't see her face. I didn't want to chance it. I probably should have just fucking chanced it because she seemed like she liked me, but how do you read a face when it's got a mask on it, man? Anyways, then I see him go behind this desk, and he just prints out this thing and puts these 5 or 6 workouts in. And I realize this guy is not trying to zone in on my problem. He's giving me a cookie cutter approach to my neck. Basically, they're stretching it out and then strengthening it up. I took that paper that the workout was in. I'm like, can I take that home with me? She was like, sure. I never got back again. I'm like, fuck this place. You serious? Pay $60 for some girl that I think might be hot to tell me which way to stretch my neck? Come on. It just seemed like a joke. It seemed like a joke that I had to explain to this motherfucker what the doctor explained to me. I shouldn't have to do that. I should just be able to go there and you should know what the fuck. But that wasn't the case. This is the fucking shit that I had to deal with. And then I saw another doctor. I ended up having to pay out of pocket. This is the state of the state of healthcare out here. I had to get another doctor who did a special procedure where they inject platelet-rich plasma in your neck or any part that's bothering you. And it's supposed to help reduce inflammation, regenerate certain things, maybe not, whatever. Went and saw him. Great doctor. Had to drive out an hour to see him. Cost me $300 just to get a consultation. But the consultation was over an hour. And this guy went into detail with what was happening with my neck. Brought out a neck thing, a bone thing with muscles. Just educated me on every part of my neck. And just said that, all you probably really need to do is just strengthen your neck now. How's this? He was so smart and detailed. He found out that because I'm double jointed, look at this. I can bend my finger all the way back. When he saw that, he gave me some really good advice. He was like, I think you shouldn't stretch your neck so much. He goes, I think you're highly flexible and maybe your neck needs to be strengthened instead of super flexible. And he goes, he thinks that's why I'm getting these pinched nerves in my neck. It's great. Cost me $300, you know, out of my pocket. Fucking worth it. He didn't try to sell me on his procedure. He didn't think I really, really needed it. And he educated me. So worth it. But to me, it's like, why can't we just get that? I don't know, man. It's just really hard to find anything good these days. But yeah, you know, the other doctor I had was great, man. He like talked to me like a dude. How's this? I think he would play with me. He would like one time he was like, this is how he got me to like lose weight. He told me he was like, he's like, your cholesterol is really high. And I was like, yeah, I know. It's always high. It's like, you really need to get that under control. And I was like, yeah, you're right. I do, but I'm not going to. I mean, this is at a time where I wasn't really like taking care of myself that much. And he goes, well, that's very, very bad. High cholesterol will compromise your erections. I was like, it would what? It would compromise your erections. I lost 45 pounds. That was it. I was like, wait a minute, what? Being fat will fuck up my heart ounce? I guess I'm done eating cereal, right? Yeah, yeah, that's it. I'm done eating cereal. I don't know. He really got to me. Like he was funny. He was smart. And he just knew how to get down to the bottom of what was important, you know, to me, to any man. I think if we can get men to realize, hey, man, if you don't lose weight, you're going to lose your dick. Everyone's going to have abs, bro. Just like gay men. Gay men are so hot. Those motherfuckers. I'm so glad, too, that they're gay. It makes it so much easier for the rest of us schlums. Us fucking fat fuck schlums. You know what I mean? Men are visual creatures. We care about looks. That's why gay men are so fucking hot. Because to be a gay man, to get another gay man, you got to be fucking visually stunning. Especially out here in Hollywood. Fuck. Bro. Let me just be gay for 3 months so I can get my abs in. I can't. Because girls are just so forgiving. They are. Almost every girl is dating somebody less attractive than them. It's a fact. That's how lucky we are to be men right now. It's so fucking easy to be a man. Jason Bacon says, it's hard to find people that care these days. You're right. Standards get set. Jeremy, you're talking about, are you talking about, you're saying standards get set. And guys, feel free to comment, you know. You're saying standards get set in the way people handle themselves in relationships or what? I don't know. I got distracted. I got really distracted. Let's talk about Palestine real quick. Another thing is I'm trying to keep this shit tight. Like so many other podcasts I was doing when I was starting and I would have guests on, we would go like with Sean McGettigan, we went fucking 4 hours. It was great, man, but I need to know how to reel that shit in. So I'm trying to keep this going for another 10 more minutes because I like these solo sodes to be concise and quicker. And hopefully I'll have some more multimedia stuff. I'm thinking about like, you know, using videos and stuff and, you know, pointing the stuff out. But yeah. Let's talk about my time in Palestine. I had a blast in Palestine. Like right now, blast. Oh my God. That was no pun intended. I did. I had a really good time in Palestine. You know, I think it's sad to see how we've been really, really unfair to the Palestinians for a really long time. And what's also unfair is that you can't even talk about it, right? Like you try to talk about that shit and then it's just like, oh no, you're going to get me canceled. They're going to call me anti-Semitic. Well, newsflash, Arabs are Semites. 100%. Arabs are Semites. The term anti-Semitic has been so used in the media pertaining to only Jewish people that now the term, when you say it, means anti-Jew. That's not the case. What Israel is doing to the Palestinians is anti-Semitic. The Palestinians are Semites. You can't say that about Israelis. A lot of Israelis are just white. So we're going to have a Semite competition. Who is the most Semitic? It's just stupid. It really is stupid. And what's stupid is that you can't even talk about this fucking shit. You talk about it, all of a sudden people are like, wow, you got balls. It's like, nah, I'm just telling the truth. It is what it is. Right? Why are we trying to run away from it? I did this video. I'm going to play this for you guys. I enjoy doing it. It's my first TikTok. I had Ahmed El-Kadri on, who's another Yemeni comedian. You can follow him on Ahmed Loves Bread. And yeah, he inspired me to start doing TikTok. And I did my first one, latched onto a song. And because of what's happening in Palestine, I ended up coming up with this thing, which is, ironically enough, kind of banned already. I'll talk about it later, but let me just show it to you guys. I did enjoy this was really, really, really fun to make. And, you know, it makes a point.
Sun up. I put on my jewelry just to go to the bodega. And I keep it with me just so that I'm feeling safer. Fendi on my body, but my feet is in Bottega. Bitch, I'm getting money, give a fuck about a hater. It's a whole lot of money in this motherfucker. Don't keep me run no broke shit, that broke shit get old. And don't keep me run no hoe shit, the hoe get too broke. Sun up.
And there you go. For anybody that didn't see it, it's just basically me playing a Palestinian holding guns and talking about how Palestinians typically have rocks, guns, and their own bodies to use as weapons. And they don't have missiles, planes, tanks, or an actual military force. And then it cuts to, you know, Israel laughing. And then the American taxpayer laughing. And then Israel asking the American taxpayer for $4 billion. And the American taxpayer going, sure, fuck healthcare. And then Israel launches a missile at my Palestinian character. So, I don't care what you say, that shit's fucking funny. And shit is funny. And that's what satire is. Satire is all about making a political statement. Is it perfect? Fuck no. But it makes a point. How the fuck are we during the pandemic gonna let our government take our tax dollars, give trillions of it to the corporations in an instant? And then fight for months to give us $600. At the same time, giving Israel $3.8 billion. So, you know, good times. Good times with that American tax dollar, you know. But I had a, you know, the thing is that I love Palestine, because I was fortunate enough to go there thanks to comedian Amr Zahir, who does a bunch of shows down there. And in 2018, he took me out there and it was freaking amazing. And this is the first experience that I had there. This here is a picture of me and Aaron Cater, who's a hilarious comic, and some guys we just met. And this was in Israel. And here's the thing. In Israel, before I went there, some Palestinians were just like, oh, you have to be very, very careful. You know, they're going to put you in the VIP room. And I'm like, what's the VIP room? Oh, man, when you get there, they're going to look at you. They're going to be like, oh, we have to do background check. They're going to put you in the room 5 hours. And I was like, that's hilarious. I'm a United States Marine. I'm sure that's not going to be a problem. So I'm traveling over there with Jennifer Jaja, who's another hilarious Palestinian comic. And she is also an activist. So she's like very active against Israel on her Twitter. Not only that, she got into a spat on Twitter with Sarah Silverman. Like her and Sarah Silverman went over Twitter and had a war. And then sooner or later, Jennifer got Sarah Silverman to start wanting to pay more attention to what was happening to the Palestinians, which is really great. So to me, I'm flying on the same plane with Jennifer. In my mind, we're going to get to Israel and they're going to taser like as soon as we get off the plane. You know what I mean? No, we get there. They look at her passport and she walks through in front of me. And I was like, what? Great. Then for sure, I'm coming in. I get there. The lady looks at my thing in her thick Israeli accent. She was like, okay, take your passport and go in that room. And then I ended up in the fucking VIP room. And it was interesting. Like in my mind, I pictured something dark and dreary, like something in Homeland, you know? A really shitty fucking room. But no, they didn't do that. It was a nice room. It had a TV on playing cartoons. It had beautiful pictures everywhere of these beautiful places in Palestine. They call it Israel though. But there's pictures of Palestine and there's like they're showing like different parts of Palestine. And when as soon as I got into the VIP room, I looked around the corner. And that's before I took this picture. Like 6 or 7 dudes in that room looked like a different version of me. And then I realized this didn't feel like a fucking interrogation. This felt like an audition for like terrorist number 2 in Homeland. But yeah. You know, to me, it's funny is that like we look back on the past and how like horrible humans were and we say never again. Yet at the same time, we have state sponsored versions of these racist tactics. And everyone just accepts it. And to me, it's fucking hilarious. Actually, it's not. It's fucking sad. But what was hilarious was doing shows in Palestine. Let me show you some pictures, guys. Palestine blew me away because, look, this is us doing shows out there. That's Mike Ishmael, Palestinian comic from America. And I mean, the people came out. In this picture here, Hattie, the one who's on the front right, he's a Palestinian citizen and he doesn't have clearance to go in and out of Palestine like some other Palestinians who actually got their clearance. He had to go through these gates and be interrogated. And I didn't have to do that, but I ended up coming down because I wanted to be part of the experience. And to me, what was really, really funny is while we were being interrogated, trying to get into Israel, I saw a cat walk from Palestine through in between the gates into Israel, no problem. And it was just very interesting to see like a cat be free as fuck. More shows. I think this was in Bethlehem. I mean, the Palestinians came out. This is one of my favorite things that I saw on the wall. It's a picture of Trump and then somebody also like spray painted like a dick on his chin. Very, very cool. This is the Church of Nativity. You can't see it in this picture, but that marble right there has a big dip in it. It has a dip in it because so many people, Lashy, you can see it right here. If I zoom in right there, that marble has been worn out because of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years of people coming to kneel and pray in front of the very spot where Jesus was born. Really amazing. Just amazing to be in these places. Mona and Hetty. Love these guys. I had so much fun. This was in Jerusalem, doing a show in Jerusalem. The Palestinians, man, are just so amazing. This is in Ramallah. And they're so educated. They're so on top of all references. They know everything. Yeah, I didn't have to change any reference whatsoever. You know, and I hear there's a statistic out there that said the people with the most PhDs per capita are or were Palestinians. This is inside the church. Look at how beautiful and ornate and everything is. The thing that I really want to show you, this is Thawra. It's a friend that I made out there. Super cool. This is what I want to show you. You see the size of that joint? Holy fucking shit. This, let me tell you something. Just marvel at the size of that joint. I got that in Palestine. In motherfucking Palestine. Like, holy motherfucking shit. I gotta be careful what I say. But when I got to Palestine, it sucked because I didn't have my weed vaporizer with me. And, you know, I was like, okay, well, whatever, you know, there's no weed. That's fine. Then we had one show. After the show, some guy came up and he was so cool. And he was like, hey, bro, that show was amazing. You guys were awesome. This, that, and the other thing. Then he goes, I can't wait to show you around. I can't wait to, like, you know, I hope you guys are having a good time out here. Take my number down. If there's anything you ever need, you call me. I'm the man you need to call. And I looked at him and I was like, can you get me some weed, bro? And he goes, I got you. And because of the type of work he does, I couldn't meet him. He had to come out. So like after the show, we all went to this beautiful bar in Palestine. It was in Palestine, man. Let me tell you something. For a people who are occupied, they don't live like it, man. Palestinians are just fashionable and fun. You know, like when I think of Palestine, I'm like, oh, they can't drink or anything. No, that's not the case. This bar was beautiful. It was this outdoor bar and you had to walk down into it. And there was just beautiful trees embedded in the bar and a gorgeous pool. I mean, it was eloquent. Awesome. So we were all going to meet at this bar. And he said, when I pull up, you know, you got to come outside and meet me and get in my car. And we got to get out of there quick because I don't want anybody to know that I'm doing this. I'm like, okay, great, man. This is like very exciting, you know, doing something like in Palestine, like this, going with a guy I've never met before. Who the fuck is this guy? You don't know. The guy hits me up, says I'm outside. I get two of my comedian friends to come with me. We go outside. He's in a drift car. And if anybody don't know what a drift car is, it's like a type of racing where it's done in a very, very small area. And instead of you racing other cars, you're trying to beat somebody's time in doing all of these obstacles. And a lot of them are obstacles where you skid the car around. You skid the car around this corner. And then when you get to this cone, you got to skid and do a 360 around the cone with your nose facing the cone. So it's a bunch of skidding techniques that you can do with a car in a very small space. And it kind of makes sense for Palestinians because they don't have much land. More and more of their land is being stripped from them day after day. They can't have an Indy 500 in Palestine. There's no fucking room. So instead, they do drift racing, which is basically a type of racing that you can do in a parking lot. So this guy pulls up in a souped up drift racing car. And we get in this car, his windows are tinted. Then he pulls out that fat fucking joint I just showed you guys. This fat fucking baseball bat of a joint. Like I was in Palestine thinking there was no way I was going to get weed. And get the fuck out of here. This was the biggest fucking joint I think anybody's ever rolled for me. I've had blunts, but not a joint like that size. Then this guy gives us a tour of Ramallah in his fucking car with a boombox in the back, cranked way the fuck up, playing some intense fucking EDM music. We're hotboxing in the car because we can't roll the windows down because what if the weed smell catches a cop or someone who wants to call us out? And we're destroying this fucking joint while this guy is drift racing all around Ramallah. He fucking like went around like the Nelson Mandela statue and just like did a 360 and told us that that's the Mandela statue and then skidded out of that area. And then all of a sudden like skidded to this one area. And it was just intense and fun and such a damn good time. That's why I kind of wish more Americans would travel. You know, for real, a lot of Americans don't travel. I hear that we're starting to more and more, but traveling is where it's at. And it was great. Like I could have fucking died, but it was worth it. It was fucking worth it. But Palestine was fucking great. And to me, it's just sad to see what the hell's going on right now, you know? But the Palestinians are resilient, man. To me, what's really funny is how I was listening to Ben Shapiro, and of course, people who are like super pro Israel will try to use the argument that, oh, Hamas, oh, they hide amongst civilians. They hide in civilian homes. It's like, bitch, we're talking about Gaza. You know how small Gaza is? Like you act like people don't understand how size works. That's like me cramming you into a phone booth with three other people. And I have to kill you, but then I kill someone else and I blame you for being so close to them. You fucking idiots. And that's why I think more people, especially if you're liberal, listen to conservatives. And if you're conservative, listen to liberals, because you'll be able to pick out some of the bullshit that they're saying, but then you'll also find out that they might point out the bullshit that you're thinking. But anyways, guys, I was going to keep this to an hour, and I'm just about doing that. We're at 53 minutes. All right, well, I'm going to get going, but I want you guys to know I got some stand-up dates coming up this Thursday, May 13th. Is that tomorrow, right? Yeah, 13th, 7:30, Mavericks in San Diego, Mavericks Beach Club. I'll be there with Eddie Ift. And then this Saturday, May 15th, in Hollywood, at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, now inside in the ballroom, I'm going to be on there with a killer lineup. Crystal Marie Denha, who's from Detroit, and she's a fucking murderer. Orny Adams, Jamie Kennedy. My boy Malik B is going to be there. It's going to be a damn good show. And then, if you guys are in Detroit, I will be headlining Mark Ridley's Comedy Club, June 17th to the 19th. And yeah, and if you guys are, online, follow me. I am, that's just not working. There you go. Mike from Detroit on everything. I just started doing TikToks. Follow me on TikTok. Oh, that video that I showed, they banned it on TikTok. You know how they banned it on TikTok? They said that it was too like violent or whatever the fuck the case may be. But you can still watch it, but they blocked out the thumbnail. Like, go figure. Like, I actually enjoy doing that video, but I'm gonna probably drop another one today because I'm trying to get in the habit of doing the TikToks every day. But guys, thank you for hanging out with me on my first solo episode. We had up to about 10 of you on there, and I really appreciate it. I hope this thing grows. I hope I can get better at this. When I have guests on, I really hope that I can make it faster and funnier, because you know, those were a little long. I know, trust me, 55 minutes. So we're going to sign off on this. All right, guys, I love you so much. Please follow me. If I'm in your town, come see me. MikeFromDetroit.com. Mike from Detroit on everything. Instagram, Twitter, Pornhub, Mike from Detroit.
Public Yemeni number one.